Thank you for joining us for our live White House web chat about making college more affordable. Also touching on the Student Aid and Fiscal Responsibility Act, SAFRA. We will be joined today by two very important administration officials. First, we will hear from Melody Barnes, who is the Assistant to the President and Director of the Domestic Policy Council. We also hear from Secretary of Education Arne Duncan, who will be with us shortly. They will both make brief remarks, and then we will turn directly to the question and answer session. I know many of you have been waiting, and we are eager to get to that portion of our chat. Just one note before we start, if you're unable to have your question answered, we want to encourage you to email us at public@who.eop.gov. Again, when I say email us, that's William Jawando in the Office of Public Engagement. And my colleagues that work with me in the Office of Public Engagement. Again, that email address is public@who.eop.gov. And with that, I will turn it over to Melody Barnes to get us started.
Great. Thank you so much, Will. And thanks to all of you. We really appreciate your waiting to join us on this important conversation. And Secretary Duncan will also join us very shortly. But we're so excited about this because, you know, Will, as you know, the president has made an historic investment in education, everything from K through 12 education to now also looking at higher education. He's also, in doing that, given us a very important aspirational goal. He wants to make sure that this country has the highest proportion of college graduates by the year 2020. So that's just in 10 years, and we know we have a lot of work to do. To get us to that goal, he also knows that we have to make higher education more accessible for people. We've already started doing that through the Pell Grant awards. The maximum amount for Pell Grants has doubled just in the last year, in the first year of the Obama administration. But again, we want to do more. You were talking about SAFRA, the Student Aid and Fiscal Responsibility Act. That's a bill that has passed the House of Representatives and is now waiting for action in the Senate. That is a critical bill. You know, one of the things that it does on the front end is make sure that we're educating our youngest citizens, that we're educating small children, even those before 4 or 5, we're talking 0 to 3 education. But on the other end of the spectrum, it makes sure that we are doing the best for students who want to go to college to a 4-year or a 2-year institution. So again, we continue the work that we've already started on the Pell Grants by making sure that the Pell Grant program is secure, making sure that the cost of the amount of the maximum Pell Grant keeps pace with inflation. But then on top of that, we also include an access and completion fund. We want to make sure that students who start college are able to complete their college education, so we provide supports and incentives to institutions to make sure that that happens. We also expand the low-cost Perkins loan program. You know, as many of you probably know, the cost of a regular loan can sometimes be around 10% or even more. The Perkins loan program offers loans of about 5%, so that makes it easier for students who've got to make sure that they fill the gap in what what loans can do for them so they can complete their education. We do all of this by going from a subsidized loan program to a direct lending program. And in fact, because we go to direct lending, which is more efficient, actually saves the taxpayers money because we are no longer providing subsidies to do what the government can do more efficiently and effectively, by doing that, we actually save about $87 billion. So the things that I've just talked about, early education, to Pell Grants, to the Perkins Loan Program, to making sure that we've got the Access and Completion Fund in place, and our work with community colleges, all that is paid for by going to direct lending. So we think that this is a smart use of the money, a great investment for the money, and something that we can do to help all of our students and make sure that we meet the president's goal of the highest proportion of college graduates by the year 2020.
Well, thank you for that. And with that, we'd like to welcome the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. We just got started, and if you want to say a couple things before we move to the question and answer session, that would be great.
I'll be very quick, and I apologize for being late, but my only excuse is I was just meeting with 4 senators working on this bill, and I think we made some progress. But I think Melody summed it up perfectly. This is just this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to dramatically increase money, put billions of dollars behind college students who are working hard, as much almost $10 billion for early childhood education, and to do all this without going back to taxpayers for a dime, simply by stopping subsidizing banks and putting the money into students. So it's a phenomenal opportunity. The President, the White House, the House of Representatives have provided great leadership. We're very hopeful that the senators will do the same, and that was the purpose of my meeting this afternoon. We've also seen great support at the grassroots level. We see some very strong editorials around the country over the past few weeks, and this is simply the right thing to do, and we're very, very hopeful this will happen. The time of going to college has never been so important. It's never been so expensive. And as all of you know, our American families haven't been in this kind of financial duress in a long time. So any chance we have to put more money behind making the college dream a reality, we're committed to doing that. This gives us a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
That's great.
Thank you, Secretary Duncan. And with that, we'll move to our questions. There's a lot of questions on here, so we'll try to get to as many as possible. Again, if we don't, please email us at public@who.eop.gov. And with that, the first question is from Lori McDonald, whose son is a sophomore in college, and his dad has been laid off in September, and he doesn't know how they're going to pay for next year's tuition. They're already maxed out on their student loans. I'm assuming they're talking about their federal student loans, and now due to unemployment, what in this bill will help them?
And again, this bill would bring unprecedented resources to increase Pell Grants, to increase Perkins Loans, to increase tuition tax credit, so billions of dollars. And what we've also tried to do, and it's already in place, is we've really tried to empower financial aid officers at the local school level. So when family situations change, mom or dad gets laid off, or 50% cut in income or something like that, we absolutely encourage students to go talk to their financial aid officers, and those financial aid officers have the power and the ability to adjust what those students can receive. And so having those conversations now in real time will be very, very important, not just for the rest of this school year, but going into the fall as well.
Well, one thing I want to add to what Arnie said, which is absolutely the right advice for this family and for others, is that the President has talked about, he talked about it in the State of the Union, the income-based repayment program. It's something that he's advocating for, and that will mean that if this particular sophomore, once he graduates from college, he will, if he goes into public service, after 10 years find that his loans are forgiven, or after 20 years have his loans forgiven, and that there will be capped out at a rate that will be consistent with what he can pay based on his monthly income. So that's a way that we're looking out for families just like this to make sure that student loans don't become such a burden that people find that they can't repay their loans, or that someone can't go into public service if they want to be a teacher, for example.
Our next question is from Nicole Zada, and who is asking, what are the options for an adult who's working full-time job and would like to continue their education, especially single mothers? She's almost finished with her associate's degree, and doesn't think that's going to get her very far in this economy. What are her options, and how will this help her accomplish your goals?
Well, one piece of this is a huge investment in community colleges. And we think whether it's 18-year-olds or 28-year-olds or 58-year-olds going back to school to retrain and retool in healthcare jobs and technology jobs and green energy jobs, we think community colleges have been this real underutilized gem along the education continuum. And so again, as part of this higher ed bill, the SAFA bill, we want to put a huge amount of money behind community colleges so that folks can go back and get real jobs in real areas based upon their community's needs, where their job openings, to take that next step. So we want to have a huge push there. If she wants to go finish that associate's degree and then go to a four-year institution, again, all of this additional financial aid will help make that more affordable for her.
Thank you, Secretary Duncan. Next question is from Octavia Coleman, who is asking, what will be done to help historically black colleges and universities?
As part of this bill, there's actually a record increase, $98 million going directly to HBCUs. It's so important that these institutions not just survive, but continue to thrive. Melody talked about the need for more teachers. We desperately need more African American and Latino teachers. I have a particular focus on getting more African-American males into teaching. 2% of our teachers around the country are African-American males. HBCUs happen to produce half, 50% of our nation's teachers. So we have to continue to support these institutions, both through direct funding, which is a piece of this, but also we anticipate over the next 10 years, in terms of, again, the additional Pell Grants going to HBCU students, about $3.2 billion in new resources going to support HBCU. So this is a huge piece of this overall strategy.
Right. You know, one of the things, Arnie, you were just talking about Pell Grants and HBCUs. I found it interesting in some reading I was doing that the take-up rate for students going to HBCUs in this past year has increased from about 400 million to about 900 million. So we know the need is there. Students going to HBCUs can access these kinds of programs and to find them really, really beneficial so they can finish their college education. And the increase that we're making at for HBCUs and other minority-serving institutions is, as Arnie said, historic and already, and the increase he talked about sits on top of a 5% increase in the president's budget from last year. So these are institutions that we are strongly supporting.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from Melissa Capella. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name, Melissa. She says, I would never encourage my kids to go to college if they'd end up saddled with debt. It's a noose around your neck that you'll never get out of. How would either of you respond to this fear?
Well, I can certainly empathize with that. I know when I was making the decision along with my parents to go to college, this was something we certainly talked about and affected the decisions that we made about college and then also knowing I was going on to law school. I think this goes back to what we were just talking about a minute ago in terms of income-based repayment and ensuring that families, that students aren't saddled by loans for an extended period of time and that the that burden doesn't affect the kind of job that the student decides to take after they finish college or after they finish a graduate school program. So again, the vice president talked about this, the president talked about it in the State of the Union, but you know, capping the loan repayment rate that a student, or the loan repayment amount that a student will owe, and ensuring after 10 years, if you're going into public service, that your loan rate amount will be forgiven, or after 20 years if you're not going into public service. I think that takes a huge burden off the shoulders of families.
Thank you very much. And some of you are asking how to ask questions on this Facebook that I'm monitoring. You ask on the Facebook chat as you're chatting, so I'm looking at your questions. So ask them right on there, and that's where I'm getting them from. Joseph Schweitzer from Florida State, he says he wants to know, he's heard of SAFR and not really sure of what it's all about. I think, Melody, you addressed some of those questions, but Secretary Duncan specifically, he's asking, what's the most important thing in this bill?
There are lots of most important things. this bill is very, very important to us. So to walk through the different components, and again, what's staggering about this is a chance to invest as much as $87 billion into education without going back to taxpayers, simply by stopping subsidizing banks. It's been interesting to me to learn that, you know, this is controversial, this is hard, but I can't think of a better time to be investing in young people. I don't think we need to continue to subsidize banks. And when there's so much need out there, if this was over $500, we should be fighting this fight. But the fact that it's over $87 billion, this is absolutely the right thing to do. So it's unprecedented increases in Pell Grants, unprecedented resources increase in Perkin loans, about $10 billion to fund community colleges and see them continue to grow. There's a $3.5 billion college access and completion fund that I'm not sure if we talked about, that's really trying to put money behind institutions that are focused not just on getting students in the front door, but helping them graduate at the back end and really building a college completion culture on campus. And then almost $10 billion over the next decade to fund early childhood education, to dramatically increase access to early childhood programs and to dramatically improve quality. And so this bill would literally fund two-thirds of our education agenda, the early childhood piece and the higher education piece. The middle part, the K-12 agenda, the president's working very, very hard and has asked for the unprecedented increases in funding at a time when the rest of domestic spending is basically flatlined. So he couldn't be more committed. He doesn't see this as an expense. He sees this as an investment. And we have a chance to take education in our country to an entirely different level. But this bill would literally fund two-thirds of our education agenda.
Right. And I think Arnie used the word investment, and that's so important. One of the things we know, just looking at the Early Learning Challenge Fund, that the investments we make in early learning, for every dollar, and these aren't our studies, and we're talking about, you know, I think the Minnesota Federal Reserve did a study that for every dollar you invest, you get, you know, $10 to $12 in return. And so we're not only making sure that students are ready to go into kindergarten and ready to learn, but we're also improving health outcomes, and we're making sure that the crime rate stays low. So there are a number of good reasons to do this and why this is such a smart investment. And the fact that we don't have to take money from the taxpayers to do it, but reinvest in such a smart program, I think really speaks to the benefit of getting this bill passed.
We have a couple of questions related to Pell Grants. I'm going to try to combine a few of those. Nikki Gagan is asking, what's the cap on Pell Grants, and are they offered year-round? And that's one specific question. And then there's another question from Peggy Satterfield that I think we could combine to say, what kind of student aid is out there for students, just the universal student aid, for those who aren't really familiar with what the government can offer?
Yeah, so I think the three main sources of potential financial aid are Pell Grants, Perkins Loans, and tuition tax credits. What we're trying to do as a part of this is to index Pell Grants to the rate of inflation plus 1%. And let me tell you why I think this is so important. We're not just trying to help juniors and seniors get to college, but I really worry about 9 and 10-year-olds where mom or dad lose a job, again, or takes a big hit to their income, and their dreams of college start to die young. They start to think college isn't for me. Mm-hmm. And people may have seen just 2 weeks ago, so a major national poll or survey came out that talked about many Americans thinking college wasn't part of their reality. It's like, it's for rich folks, it's not for them. That has to fundamentally change. We have to educate our way to a better economy. So if this bill passes and we could index Pell Grants to the rate of inflation plus 1%, so families would never be falling behind, then we could look any 9 or 10-year-old in the eye around the country and say, just, you know, however tough things might be at home, whatever's going on in your community, if you work hard, if you stay in school, that college dream is going to be possible for you. We also want to do things to put some incentives on the table for colleges to keep their costs down. And one of the things we want to do with the Perkins Loans program is give more resources to universities where we're not seeing these escalating tuition costs. But if we could really commit to the American public that over the long haul we're going to be there, I think that would open up a whole new world of opportunity for students who think, despite their hard work, they just think college is not for them, and that has to change. That fundamentally has to change.
Thank you, Secretary Duncan. We also have several questions related to private loans and their growth. So I'll try to. Jennifer Jones is asking, what about students that have private loans to supplement the cost of their education? The banks are taking advantage of students, in her mind, by charging high interest rates. Is there anything that can be done about that?
Again, I think if we have increased Pell Grants, if we have increased Perkins Loans, the grants are grants, the Perkins Loans, we want to keep those interest rates at a very modest amount, then hopefully there's significantly less need to go out on the private side.
We have a question from Michael Decker. Is anything in this bill help people who have a college degree but are unemployed and need to make a career change and get additional training and education?
Absolutely. Again, this community college play we think is hugely, hugely important. So more money to make going back to school more financially affordable, but then a huge emphasis on building up the infrastructure and the ability for community colleges to take this big influx of students coming in, almost $10 billion there. So whether it's going to a career changer or going back to touch up your skills or get certification in a new field, we think community colleges have never been more important. As families get back on their feet, the country's going to get back on their feet, and we think community colleges can really help to lead the way there. So there's a huge play here. I'll say not just on the financial aid side, but our Undersecretary of Education, Martha Cantor, is the first community college president to hold that position. She did an extraordinary job, a real visionary leader in California, and we brought her in, not by accident, but strategically, because we thought the community college agenda was so important to us going forward. We couldn't find a better person to help lead us where we need to go.
And I think related to that, for someone who's out of school and may be working, is the online skills laboratory. And we recognize that everyone isn't, you know, a high school senior then going on to college and then maybe going on to graduate school, that there are people who have may be out working, who have families, who have more complicated schedules. And the ability to work and study online is something that is becoming more prevalent and more important. So we want to make sure that students have access to those resources as well. And that's something that's, again, a part of this bill.
Thank you, Melanie. We have a question from Suzanne Thomas. She's asking about the middle class and how this bill will affect her. She's a parent who has had trouble meeting some of the income requirements for aid for her child. Is there anything that will help her in this legislation, middle class?
Again, the tuition tax credits, which would equal $10,000, the president wants to make that a permanent part of what we go forward. And so we fund it on a one-time basis. It's absolutely a middle-class play. That $10,000 basically on the, the community college side, which is more affordable, basically makes that experience free and would dramatically reduce the cost at many four-year institutions. So part of this bill is making the tuition tax credits, $10,000, a permanent opportunity.
Right, and that was something that we started last year when we were able to pass the Recovery Act. So that was the first time, and as Arnie said, we want to make that permanent because we know how important it is for middle-class families.
Thank you very much. There's a question from Barbara Solomon. I think you mentioned earlier, Secretary Duncan, holding tuition costs down, but we've had several questions in this vein. And she asks, is there any way the federal government can encourage educational institutions to rein in their high tuition costs?
Yeah, it's a great question, something we spend a lot of time thinking about. So what we're, is we put more money out there, increase giving universities more access to Perkins loans. We want to put more resources behind those schools that do a good job of reining in those costs. And so we're trying to create some incentives there. I think this isn't a place where we can have penalties, but some real carrots out there for good actors. The other thing I would say is it's very interesting. America, we're blessed. We have by far the best college university system in the world. Nothing comes close. There are literally a couple thousand great choices, great options to choose from. And I think, American parents, American students are very, very smart. And universities that are having runaway tuition increases, I think parents and students are going to continue to vote with their feet. And we're seeing universities start to move in the opposite direction. You've seen some universities really hold the line. You're seeing some universities move to more no-frill campuses. We're seeing some programs go from 4 years to 3 years. And so I think with the financial pressure that so many families are feeling, it's pushing, it's compelling universities that they want to compete for students. They have to think very different ways. And I think over time, while we'll put some incentives on the table, want to continue to monitor this closely, the American public is going to vote with their feet. And those universities that are doing a great job of containing or even reducing costs, I think they're going to have many more students come to them and they're going to be able to grow. And those universities where tuition increases are far in excess of the rate of inflation, I think they're going to struggle to find students over time. And I think that's a healthy competition. And again, I have great, great faith in students and families and parents to make good choices here.
We also have several questions asking about disabled students. Is there anything in this legislation? Becky Green asks, she says, I'm a disabled student who's on a fixed income. It's hard for me and folks like me to avoid school. Is there any extra help or anything in this bill that would address that?
Well, it's a great question. Again, if there's a fixed income or a limited income, we want, again, all these resources, increased Pell Grants, increased Perkins loans, to go to families and individuals that need the most help. And so while there isn't a specific set aside in this bill for students with disabilities, families with financial challenges need additional help. That's precisely why we're pushing this so hard.
Our next question is from Anthony Patterson, who brings up the dropout rate. I know you talked about access and completion earlier. He says that it's a big issue for students getting into college. What will this bill do about that? And another question from Kyle Shepherd. He asks, does this bill in any way help high school students, such as getting ready for college? So we've had several questions like that.
So let me take on the college completion issue. And we have this College Access and Completion Fund, $3.5 billion. These are huge resources that we want to put out there across the country on a competitive basis to colleges and universities that want to build a culture, again, not just around access, not just about getting in the front end, in the front door, but around completion. This is about attainment. And it's very interesting as you look at the data around the country, colleges aren't that dissimilar from high schools. You see some institutions of higher education that do a phenomenal job of graduating, whether it's children coming from disadvantaged backgrounds, or first generation going to college, or English language learners. Other universities don't have nearly as good of outcomes. And so we want to really put a huge amount of resources through states into those universities that want to build a culture around college completion. We also are pushing for much more transparency, and we're pushing in the FAFSA form that you fill out, the financial aid form, the front end, to have every student know, I'm applying to this university, this is their graduation rate. And it's a real chance here, we think, to put very significant resources behind folks that want to do the right thing, that aren't just interested in accepting students, but are interested in graduating them. And we want to shine a spotlight in those places that are breaking through, highlight best practices, and start to replicate them nationally.
And I'm so glad this person asked a question about the dropout issue, and I know that's something that Secretary Duncan and the President have been really focused on. In fact, just yesterday, the President went and he joined General Colin Powell and Alma Powell to talk about this at the America's Promise Alliance event. You know, 7,000 students a day drop out of high school. I mean, that's just a stunning number to me. That's 1.2 million students every year. And we realize, for all the reasons that we've been talking about this afternoon, that you've got to, if you have to finish college, and it's so important, I mean, finish high school and then go on to college, you have to be able to get through high school first. So we've put really important resources behind this, and in large part giving local districts, giving states the tools and resources they need to turn schools around. So the President talked about a school turnaround fund, and $3.5 billion that, again, came through the Recovery Act, but additional funds in our budget to make sure that we're working with and giving local districts the resources they need to take any number of about four different models, decide which one works best for them so that they can turn around their schools and make sure that students are graduating and not dropping out. And at the same time, there's also the Graduation Promise Fund, additional resources so we can make sure we have the right data and students and parents can see the red flags go up if someone looks like they're about to head out the wrong track. That we're meeting the needs of students and keeping them interested and engaged in school. And for those students who do drop out, trying to bring them back into the system and finding the right kind of school for them. And even for some, the opportunity to finish high school and at the same time get credits going towards college. So there are a number of different ways that we can work with parents and work with local school districts to make sure that students stay in school and that they finish high school and then can go on to college.
Thank you, Melody. We have a couple of questions related to teachers, and Sherry Gay is asking, is there anything in this legislation for teacher loan forgiveness programs? Is there any modifications of past programs, and what are we doing to support teachers?
I appreciate the opportunity. This is a huge deal for us, and I think Melody really nailed it earlier, that this income-based repayment, IBR, is hugely important. And what we hope as this bill goes forward is that we'll have a chance for folks that want to go into the public sector. Again, if you're graduating from law school and want to go work in a legal clinic in the inner city or in a rural community or a medical clinic, whatever it might be coming out of medical school, but obviously we have a huge passion around getting the next generation of great teachers into education. It's an interesting time while states are really struggling now financially. We're worried about teacher layoffs this next year. Over the long haul, over the next 5, 6, 8 years, we anticipate as many as 1 million teachers retiring in this country, about a third of the workforce. It's a huge turnover. It's the baby boomer generation moving on towards retirement. And so our ability to attract and retain great talent over that next 4, 5, 6, 8 years is literally going to shape public education in our country for the next 30 years. It's a generational shift. So many great people I've talked to historically would have loved to have gone and taught. That's where their heart was, that's where their passion was, but they were overwhelmed with loan repayments. They came out of college owing $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 in loans and simply couldn't follow their heart, couldn't follow their passion, and went on to do something else. With this income-based repayment, if we're able to reduce loan repayments each month to 10% of income, and then as Melody said, after 10 years of public service, erase zero, goes to zero, any debt you still have, we think we can attract the hardest working, most committed college graduates into public education, and by doing that, really change education for a generation's country. So a huge, huge opportunity here. Income-based repayment is something folks need to watch very, very closely.
And I know the president and you, Arnie, have consistently said that teachers and leaders in schools are one of the most important factors, if not the most important factor, for a student. And even outside this bill, work that we started last year based on the Recovery Act, focusing on, you know, recruiting, retaining, and supporting teachers and making sure that schools have the best teachers in place for their students. That's work that we started last year that we're continuing this year as we look at reauthorizing the Elementary and Secondary Education Act.
Thank you very much. And you actually answered it. We had some questions on high student loan debt, and you kind of went into some of that. We have a question about textbooks. Nicole Zada is saying that textbook prices are too high, they're ridiculously priced, and you can't even sell them back to the college bookstore in some cases. Is there anything in this legislation or that you, either of you, are doing to address that?
I don't know if there's anything specifically in this legislation, but this idea of open source textbooks is one that we have a lot of interest in. These costs are devastating. Senator Durbin, one of the senators I actually was just meeting with, is passionate about this, and we want to, again, work with folks who can think very creatively about reducing these costs. We're also pushing for transparency, so the students and, more importantly, professors understand how much the books cost that are asking students to read. But this is an area where I think over the next couple of years you'll see a whole different level of creativity.
Yeah, I still have some of my textbooks from high school and college. I mean, from college and from law school, because my mom says you cannot do anything with those. Those cost a lot of money. So they're still sitting on the shelf. I can definitely empathize with the questioner.
We're going to have a few more questions. The next one's about graduate degrees. Laura Gallagher asks, will this bill do anything for those of us trying to pursue graduate degrees, such as medical school or law school? And if so, what?
And again, the income-based repayment for that law school graduate, that medical school graduate, that, you know, the law school graduate, rather than taking the you know, very lucrative private sector corporate job, wants to go work in a legal aid clinic in underserved communities. All of this money, this income-based repayment, would try and make that much more affordable for the law school graduate, that medical school graduate, again, or a graduate student in any other field. So how do we get great talent into the public sector? Teaching being one area, but, you know, the particular interest, but many other areas. Income-based repayment is designed to bring that great talent where we need it, as a country, where we need it most. This is really a call to service, and we want to support folks that want to make a difference in the lives of others.
Thank you very much. We have time for, I think, a couple more questions. Grant Walmer is asking, two more questions. Grant Walmer is asking, when you say take out the middleman, what do you mean by that? And then as an ancillary, if we could combine with that, since we're almost out of time, what information would you point students to? Deborah Banachow asks, where can we find out information about what kind of public aid is available to students? So the middleman and...
Sure. Well, we've been talking about going from subsidized lending, you know, banks originating loans, and then the government subsidizing that and supporting the origination of those loans, to direct lending, which would mean that the U.S. Treasury would originate those loans, and then those loans would be serviced on a competitive basis by lenders. That's what we mean by taking out the middleman. What we know already, because there are a number of schools that have already gone to direct lending, is that this is something the government can do and can do extremely well. And why would we pay additional subsidies to banks for something that we can already do when we can take those funds, $87 billion in this case, and invest them to make sure that more students have access to college and that they have better services once they go to college?
And on how to get more information, feel free to visit our website, the Department of Education website, and we have all this laid out, and we're going to continue. We're very hopeful this bill will pass, and if this bill passes, again, it's a huge number of new opportunities. We'll make sure we're constantly updating that website so that folks have the latest information of what's available to them.
And with that, we will end our web chat, and I want to thank Secretary Duncan and Melody Barnes, the director of our Domestic Policy Council, for their time, and thank you all for participating. Again, if you have any questions that were not answered, please email us at public@who.eop.gov.
Actually, I could add just one thing.
Yes.
If you're on Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn, we would really be interested in hearing from you on the question, what does a 21st century education mean to you? And we'll be looking at your answers and putting those on our blog. So please answer the question for us. What does a 21st century education mean to you?
All right. With that, we'll end. Thank you.